Philippians chapter 2. Now, this is not going to be as profound as last week. I don't know that much in the New Testament is. That's one of the high marks, the high water marks. You know, the kenosis, the emptying of Christ to come to earth, to put on humanity, to walk among us. And not only that, as it says, who being in the form of God thought it not robbery to be equal with God, but he made himself of no reputation, verse 7, and took upon him the form of a servant and was made in the likeness of men. And being found in fashion as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross. Wherefore God hath highly exalted him and given him a name which is above every name, that the name of Jesus every knee should bow, of things in heaven and things in earth and things under the earth, and every tongue should confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. And that's where we ended. So as I can say, that's rich ground. We can't go, you know, much more impactful theologically. But this is still what God has for us next, because it's the next portion. And what is that? Well, it's this. Wherefore, because of this, my beloved, because this is what Jesus did, as ye have always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, this is what I want you to do, because this is what Jesus did. This is, so what? He did that. It's remarkable theology, but so what? What does it mean? Well, it means this. You should work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. If that's an awkward verse there, it was for me when I first got saved. I remember it well. And I was talking to a man, Roger Tracy, you know, if I want to name him. And I said, this is sticking out to me like a sore thumb. What goes? Because I just was young in the Lord, and I thought it was asking you to earn your salvation. And I said, this flies in the face of everything I've ever learned. I was only a year in the Lord or less. And he said, well, what's the problem? Get on with it. Work it out. Do it. You're not certainly not going to earn it, but you're saved. Now what? Well, let's see it. Let's get on with it. And I said, oh, and that worked for me. And so I've explained it that way ever since. Certainly Paul, who told us that salvation is by grace through faith, it's not of our own efforts, you know, not of works, lest any man should boast, is now not talking out the other side of his mouth and saying, hey, I want you to earn salvation. That's silly. It's also, that's what everyone else in America believes. That's what religion touts. You know, you do things and you abstain from other things, and maybe, just maybe, you'll make it. The Bible knows nothing of that, obviously. And of course, that's not what it's saying here. Okay, this mind was in Christ. I want it to be in you. And what does it look like? It looks like working out your own salvation with fear and trembling. Now, the question then is, well, why? Well, okay. Verse 13. It's a good question. For it is God which worketh in you, both to will and to do his good pleasure. Okay, it's the pleasure of God to work in you. He's put this salvation in you. The blood of Jesus Christ purchased your salvation. The Spirit of Jesus Christ seals your salvation. Christ is at the right hand of God, working with God. He's your agent, your lawyer, if you will, on your behalf, and working these things out. God has invested in you his Son. God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten Son. I've said before, God's not ambivalent or indifferent about the outworking of your life, about your not only your eternity, but the here and now. He's conforming you to the image of Jesus Christ. He's actively involved in that. He's not distant or, like I say, ambivalent about that. Would anyone question that? So what does it look like? It looks like God has put this in you. Now, let's go. It's time. Chop, chop. Let's get it done. Kind of idea. Okay, and I'm not suggesting you're not. I'm saying this is what the verse is saying. It's time. It's high time. Wake up. Let's go. Let's move. Let's work at our salvation with fear and trembling. Why is that? Oh, many, many reasons. Again, Jesus purchased you with his blood. The Holy Spirit's in you. Now you're going to stand before a judge, a righteous judge. You remember the parable of the minas, the five minas and the three minas and the one. The guy, you know, invests and he makes, you know, five more. It's a unit of currency, whatever. Make it thousands or something, whatever you want to do, or millions. And then the other guy with the three, he doubles his. I think that's even harder, a little bit harder when you have less to work with. But anyway, and Jesus is like, awesome, you done great. And the guy with the one, yeah, I buried it. I know how you are. You even, you know, exact, you want payment even when you haven't invested. I hid it. So here's your own. And everything we say, everything we do, it's going to be judged. It's going to be weighed. It gives me great hope and great fear all at once. I think there's some stuff that's going to pass the test. It's going to be laudable. It's going to be, look, Lord, what I did for you. And I think it's going to be result in crowns. So what's crowns? Why is that important? You mean the ability to worship God eternally? Remember we cast our crowns and before the Lamb in Revelation chapter 5. I think it has to do with our capacity. I think it has to do in the kingdom of our, you know, you say, I'll make you ruler over five cities, remember? The guy with the five minas. And there's all kinds of things about this. There's a judgment. We're going to stand before God, and all this stuff's going to be tested. Fear and trembling? that seems as natural as falling off a log to me. So what does it look like? How do I work this out? How do I work this salvation out? Well, I'll give you one, you know, do all things without murmurings and disputings. Don't crab. Quit your belly aching. Get on with it. And it's, you know, you give somebody a job to do at work and they just like, oh, I got all the tough jobs. And they just, they're ready to collapse under the weight of all this. You want me to work for money? Oh, this is. God has given us work to do. Don't get all spleeny on me now. Brace up. Let's go. We got work to do. Roll up your sleeves. Complaining. Wait a second. Complaining? He saved me. I was going to hell. Now he wants me to share the gospel? That tyrant. God, how unreasonable is God right now? I mean, come on, really? You want me to work for you? I thought you saved me so I could just relax and be all casual and just kind of Cadillac my way into heaven. And by the way, this is a problem. Because of grace, some people think, no, there's no works at all. Well, let's get this straight. Don't muddy this in our thinking. You can get this wrong. We work because we're saved, not to get saved. He purchased us. We're soldiers for Jesus Christ. You'll see that here. We're his workmanship. We're workmen and women. He's purchased us for a price. He's got work for us to do. Did you see the fine print on the contract? Well, there's no fine print, but we learn about it. And we say, okay, I see that. You saved me for a reason. That's reasonable. Let's do it. Let's do it. And this is fear. Murmurings and disputings. Murmuring, it sounds like the children of Israel in the wilderness. He took us out of Egypt. Isn't that good enough? He's taking you to the promised land. Or do you just want to sit here and argue with me about it? Disputings, right? Oh, you brought us out here to die. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That's the type of God we worship. He took us out of death to bring us into more death. What? But it's how we are. I mean, it's a lot of people. I was talking about work, you know. You want to be the guy on the job when, okay, this is what I need for you to do today. Oh, okay, I'm on it like a hornet. I'm all over this. And then every time boss comes to check on you, he's just seeing how awesome you're performing the task that he gave you. When I was, it was my last week of work, and my boss said to me, "Anything you want to do, you name it. You got the." I'm like, "Whatever you got, you know me. Marching or fighting pays the same. You give me a job, I'll do it to the best of my ability." And he just said, "Yeah, I know, but I thought if there's anything you, well, after a whole career, it's like, oh, I've always wanted to, what? What? I've done it all." But, and I appreciate him doing like that. But I want to show him, like, even at the last day, he said, he gave me two apprentices last day, so I want you to, you know, instruct them, teach them, do this, and you can just stand here on the ground and watch them. And I put my harness on and get up in the cable tray, because that's who I am. That's who I want to present. I don't want to point, hey, this is what you're supposed to do. I want to show people this is what you're supposed to do. And I don't want to do it with, because I read this verse 40 years ago. It's time to start performing the verse at some point, right? Because I know that you want to do things without murmuring and disputing. Some people, I'm going to ask them to do something, and it's like pulling teeth. And it's like, oh, you're kidding me right now? Forget him. I'm just going to go to the next person and you know how that works. The person who gladly, hey, anything you need, I'm on it. Don't even consider it again. That's how we want to work at our salvation. We want to do things without murmuring and disputing, that ye may be blameless and harmless, the sons of God, without rebuke in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation, among whom ye shine as lights in the world, as luminaries. You know, you want to, just go back to the old little song you learned when you were in the third grade in Sunday school class, this little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. You want to hide under a bushel? No, I'm going to let it shine, right? Because it's a dark world. We complain about the world like it surprises us that sinners are sinning. I'd see my mom from time to time. You know what they're doing now? And she was like on hyper alarm alert mode because she was watching C-SPAN or listening to some political show. And I say we should be aware, but you shouldn't be surprised. And I'd say to her, "Mom, we're way past being surprised. Why do you, oh no, you always," she'd use it like, "You're supposed to know that it's bad and awful and this is the way you're supposed to act." And I'm thinking, she told me like, you can get used to bad and then it's like, bah, no big thing. I see it all the time. I saw her point, but no. Don't get wiped out like, oh, it's bad, it's never been this bad, it's horrible, evil, horrible, oh, it's just going to hell in a handbasket. Calm down, breathe. It's a sinful earth. It's never been a friend of grace, ever. There's been times when America has been more respectful to Christ and to Christianity and to Christians. There's been times of that. But this is the hand we're dealt now. This is a run-up to the last of the last days. And this is the time when you're supposed to shine the brightest, when it gets the darkest. This is the time when the world needs the most light. Don't be obnoxious. Don't shine the light right in their eyes, but shine it by their feet so they can walk, you know. And this is what we're called to do. This is why he saved us, to share the gospel, right? Get on with it. Work out your salvation. Holding forth the word of life. That's how we shine. Preaching the gospel, living the gospel. You want to be a good example, and you want to use your words when it's required. You're holding forth the word of life. And Paul's saying that I may rejoice in the day of Christ, that I have not run in vain, neither labored in vain. Welcome to my life and one of my biggest concerns. He's saying, really? Adam, look around. We're not the type of people to, you know, we're not here today, gone. We're not fair weather Christians. Yeah, but I would say look around and there's plenty who have been. And when you, I've got stories to tell you over the decades. Like people I put my, this is my brother. He's my bestest. We're like homies, and he's not even anywhere close to the Lord at all. And I, like, you know, I'm Paul or Silas, make me the one. I don't have to be the hero, right? And Paul or Silas, the other, he's not even walking with the Lord now. And I, like I say, I've got story after story after story. And Paul's concern about the Philippians, hey, I went and planted that church. You remember, you know, the jail and jailhouse rock and all that, and the jailer and this house, and remember, you know, Lydia and all that stuff, and that demon-possessed girl who was like, hey, I was working among you guys, and I was trying to get some fruit and trying to see lives change, and what, you tell me the whole place is like nothing anymore? Well, it's not. It's the Philippian church, and they're doing great, thank you very much. But he's always concerned. Like, you know, imagine if you founded the Corinthian church, wouldn't that concern you? Would you pray night and day for them boys? They are just in a horrible way, right? And I can go through all the reasons why, but we know them pretty well. And so think about that. So what's your ministry look like, and who have you invested in? How's it going? Because, you know, we think about there's some people, and you're thinking, oh, that's awesome. It's no greater joy than our children walk in the truth, right? Whether they be our spiritual children, our physical children, but there's no bigger heartache when they're not. And that's Paul saying, listen, I did a work there. I'm working out my salvation, which, by the way, involves you when I held forth the word of life. And I want to rejoice in the day of Christ, and that I have not run in vain, neither labored in vain. Yet if I be offered upon the sacrifice and service of your faith, I joy and rejoice with you all. Remember, it's this letter, this epistle is about joy. If I'm offered upon the sacrifice, if I'm put to death here, if I'm poured out like a drink offering is what he's saying, if I be offered upon the sacrifice, poured out, and the service of your faith, great, terrific. I rejoice in that. Really? Yeah, don't you remember in chapter 1? For me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. So Paul's in prison, not knowing he's going to be beheaded. I have an idea that he knows, not this time, not yet. But he's waiting to speak to Nero, to see how his case is going to go. And he says, if I'm poured out like a drink offering, both Jews and pagans did this. When they offered a sacrifice, they would take a cup of wine and pour it out, all of it, not like pour it a couple of drops, take a sip, pour it a couple more drops, take a sip, share some with God kind of idea. No, it was poured out, a libation. And we read about this in Leviticus. And it's an offering to the Lord. And he says, if that's me, if I'm poured out like a drink offering on the sacrifice, on the altar, great. This is, well, part of us working out our salvation, part of your Christianity is the end of your life. I want to be faithful right to the end. When's that? I don't know, a week from Tuesday? I'm on borrowed time now, 30 years from now? I don't know. None of us do. Don't want to think too much about it. Just long as I'm found faithful and I finish well. And like Abraham Lincoln said, die at your post with your boots on. That's all. I'm not asking for much, am I? And I'm not. I'm not. That's what I want. That's what he wants. That's what he expects. He wants us to be faithful. I've got this terminal thing and I've got X amount to, well, I read here, without murmurings and disputings. If I have disputings, argue it out with God. Wrestle with him. But complain and kvetch and, oy vey, my life is horrible. It's going sideways. I don't want to be that. You know how it is with some people, you ask them how they're doing, and you don't even ask because you know you're going to get an organ recital. Oh, my knee, you talk about pain, and I've never been so, I'm sick, and I'm this, and I'm that. And if you're sick, I won't know about that. That's legit. I mean, if you do have knee pain, we can pray about that. That's fine. I'm not criticizing, but you know the person is always just, you're going to be 3 hours listening to every last ache and pain they've ever had, and You don't want to be, you don't want to be like that. Again, I'm saying you got legitimate stuff. Well, we should know about that. I'll tell you about my sickness here. My sickness. But if I'm poured out like a drink offering, that's great. For the same cause also do you joy and rejoice with me. But I trust in the Lord Jesus to send Timothy. Now he's going to give us that's him. Now he's going to talk about two other guys, Timothy, and he's going to talk about Epaphroditus. And you're thinking, what's the change in all of a sudden? Why are we talking about these people? He's given us examples of those who are working out their faith and what it looks like so that when we see it, we won't miss it. Okay? I'm going to send Timothy to you, Timotheus. I bet he liked being called Timothy better. I'm just saying. Maybe it made him sound more stately instead of Timmy. I don't know. Okay, I'm going to send Timotheus shortly unto you. And this is the same Timothy that we have 1 and 2 Timothy named after. He's kind of Paul's right-hand man, his protege, his young. Like, we talk about, like, you know, two Christian friends of equal stature. We call it, like, you know, Paul and Silas, right? Or Paul and Barnabas. And you need somebody in your life like that. You need accountability. And then if you know something, yeah, I don't even think you should know something. I think as soon as you get saved, there should be a Timothy in your life. So there should be someone you're pouring your spirituality in, someone you're teaching, someone you're like, is like, you need that. And if you're a Timothy, you need a Paul. God's never given me that. I always prayed for that. Early on, I always want to, and there's been kind of like some people, like one of the guys been like, you know, Chuck Missler, but I never met him. You know, Joe Foch is another one, but he speaks in my life, but he doesn't know me by name. I listen to him, and he's been a great blessing. Well, of course, my pastor, you know, Ken Graves is kind of, there's a, you know, a Paul-Timothy kind of relationship there, but he's a big church, he's got a lot of stuff, and he's got a lot of Timothys, and there's never been somebody who's just like, you know, who's like generational. And besides, he's younger than me. It's kind of a little awkward, but, well, only by 3 years. But anyway, but there's never been someone who's like generationally older than me. Now, that'd be pretty significant old, right? But when I was saved, when I was like, you know, 20, it wouldn't have been so hard. But there's never been that. But I always thought that there should be. But God's used it, like, used different ones. And just the way it's worked out with me. But here he has this guy, Timothy. And is he going to send him to you that I may be of good comfort when I know your state? He's going to come. He's going to come back to me and tell me how you're doing. And it's going to come for me. It's going to put me in a good state of mind. Because I don't have anyone. I have no man like-minded who would naturally care for your state. What high praise. Because Paul is the ultimate pastor. Hey, I don't care if I'm poured like a drink offering. Long as you guys are doing well. You know, however this is going to play out, it's all about you guys. And Pastor Paul, he's awesome. And he's saying, you know, and he saw in Timothy that like-mindedness. I don't even care about me. How's it going with you? That's a rare thing. That's the pastor's mind, where your own self. It's not even an issue. What can I do for you? How can I serve you? How can I minister to you? He says, you know, Timothy's just like that too. So he's going to come. He's going to find out how you're like. He's going to come back and report to me. I have no man who's like-minded who will naturally care for your state. He's not about himself. He's all about you. For all seek their own, not the things which are Jesus Christ. All seek their own. Have you read Facebook? Have you been awake? Have you watched? Have you observed? Everyone's about their own cause. But you know Timothy, you know the proof of him, that as a son with the Father, he hath served me with good in the gospel. Okay, so you're going to palm off Timothy on us, and you're going to, you know, he's going to come, and hey, Paul, how about why don't you come for a visit, huh? I imagine that Paul the Apostle, among all the churches he's planted, is in great demand. And he's just like anybody else. You know, Ken Graves is, No, he is. He's almost every week he's off somewhere, you know, midweek for a day or two. Most weeks. He's in great demand. Paul is. So I'm just going to send my emissary because I can't come myself. No, him therefore I hope to send presently, so soon as I shall see how it will go with me. He's still in prison, right? He'd be making that journey himself, but right now I'm chained to this guy here and he doesn't want to go to Philippi, okay? There's orders to keep me in custody right now, so I'm not going anywhere. But I trust in the Lord that I also myself shall come shortly. I think Paul has an idea and understanding that not this time. It's not yet that he's going to be poured out like a drink offering. In 2 Timothy, I think he's got a sense that he is. And when we go through that, you'll see it. It's kind of his swan song. He knows he's wrapping up here on earth, and he's got a few things he wants to instruct Timothy, and by extension, us as well. Here, I think he's got a sense of, like, it's not yet. I trust in the Lord that I myself shall come shortly. Why? Because he wants to check on how it's going. Again, no greater joy than to see his children walking in the truth. And he loves them, and he wants to be with them, and he wants to fellowship with them. I hope that's your heart's desire as well. Yet, I supposed it necessary to send to you Epaphroditus, my brother, my companion in labor, and fellow soldier, but your messenger, and he that ministered to my wants. For he longed after you all, and was full of heaviness, because he had heard that he had been sick. For indeed he was sick, nigh unto death. But God had mercy on him, and not on him only, but on me also, lest I should have sorrow upon sorrow. There's a lot there, so let's take it apart here. Let's unpack. It's necessary. I don't want it to happen, but it's necessary. I send back to you Epaphroditus, who, by the way, came from Philippi. And he's going back to Philippi. He's a Philippian. He came with a gift, financial, for Paul. And with the express, like, okay, here's the offering that the Philippians have taken up for you. This is either the second or third time that they've done that. And they sent Epaphroditus with the money. And now he says about his Epaphroditus, he's a brother, a companion in labor, which is a worker, and a fellow soldier. Wow, he wears quite a few hats. Well, he's a brother, he's a Christian. I had sweet fellowship with him. I love Epaphroditus. This is what he's saying, is you sent the right guy. He's tremendous. He's a brother. He's a companion in labor. Roll up your sleeves. Boy, this guy's a worker. He's awesome. He could get some stuff done. And we're going to find out the reason that he got sick was working for the Lord tirelessly, past the point of exhaustion, way when everyone else should have, okay, it's quitting time. Let's go, we don't want to get whistle bit, let's leave, let's, no, we're just getting started. He's that guy, you know, just like the Energizer Bunny keeps going and going and going. You know people like that. They never stop. I don't want to be a workaholic. I do for the Lord. I want to be addicted to the ministry like Paul talks about. Now I got more time now that I'm not working a regular job. I don't want to spend more time on the Lord, for the Lord. Okay, Sue's too. Yeah. No, that's a good point. I want to do more. I got more time. Besides, you know, now that I know some stuff. Some people look at this time, and now it's time to retire. You know, from the pulpit, from ministry. That's fine. Let them and God work that out. Me? I finally feel like I come to a place where I know something. Now's not the time to set that aside. Yeah, let's go fishing, you know, 40 hours a week or more. And fishing's good. Fishing's good. Wait, looking forward to doing that right off soon. Yep, fishing's good. But I want to work for the Lord. I want to work for the Lord way past what's considered normal. This is Epaphroditus. And what's his work for the Lord? He's running errands for Paul. Paul, you need a coat? I'll go get you one. You need food? You need... Listen, when they're in prison, Rome didn't feel like it was necessary to feed you. Somebody from outside, one of your friends, is going to take care of you. Or that's it. You're all done. So he's taking care of all Paul's needs. He's got the money from Philippi he brought with so that Paul can, you know, get the things he needs and everything else. So he's his brother. He's a companion in labor, fellow worker, and he's a fellow soldier. This is the guy who told us that we had a spiritual warfare continually. Same guy, okay? He brought some weapons. He's helping me fight. What does that look like? Prayer 101, prayer meeting every day? Does that look like, you know, spiritual nourishment? What is that? Fellow soldier. I got your back, Paul. I'm here for you. That's, all of us need that. Some of us think we can go it alone. There's nothing sadder and nothing sillier. Me, I got an army. I can take them all on. I'm a one man. I'm an army of one. By the way, what a horrible commercial that is. Have you thought about that? Army of one. What are you, a superhero? I went in the Marine Corps, and the first thing they try to do, and it's all kind of, they're playing in your head. They're trying to strip you down, get you to think. They call you maggot, and they call you nothing, and they're really beating up on you emotionally and mentally. And then they build you back up as a unit. You find your purpose as part of a team. You're not an army of one or a single man unit. You derive your, you're only a Marine, you know. They know what they're doing. They know how to build Marines. When you're in combat situation, and I've never been. I don't want to make this more than it. When you're in combat situation, you want more guys on your team than on their team. You want more firepower, and you know the enemy of my enemy is my friend. I don't care about your politics right now. You know, you're pointing your weapon in the right direction. We're killing the enemy, right? Okay, we're good. We're good. You see what I'm saying? And to have a fellow soldier, to have somebody to help you out. Now, sometimes your temptations come and you're all alone. I totally get that. I totally get that. I know Satan is. And he's the Terminator. He's no mercy, no let up, no ever, just a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. Isn't it good when you know somebody's praying about you? Isn't it good when you're with somebody and you can talk to them and you don't have to go alone? He's so effective at what he does. Satan's been Satan for a long time. He knows how to win. He knows how to get his point across. This is why Paul has to call us to perform. Okay, it's time. It's high time. Oh, I'm just so stressed and I'm just so full of anxiety right now. And Satan's been doing a good job. If you're going to pieces like that, he's doing a good job. Now, I get this. Somebody breaks in your house and guns down your spouse in front of you. That could be a bad day. That could be a stressful situation. You may have to talk with somebody and see somebody about that. You say, it's going to be that bad before you give me the benefit of the doubt? No, no. When we have somebody taken from us, that's a bad day. I get it. I know some people years and years and years and years and years later, they never got past that. That's not who God's called us to be. Get on with life. Get on with your living. Get on with your... I don't dally here much. I remember Ken preaching a message. It was called, I'm trying to think, because they had a very, Medicate or Meditate. Ooh, he got a lot of trouble for that. When he told you, your problem might not be the sedatives you need or the drugs that, I think he preached that at like a worship leader's, and they're all, not all, don't look at our worship leader, okay, don't, a lot of them are very anxiety ridden. Can I say, I don't know, they're just made of a different breed of cat, and that went over like a lead balloon, that didn't, and they were lined up 20 deep, waiting for their turn to take their pound of flesh. And I remember him preaching that and telling us about that and stuff. I get it. Life in 21st century America, men's hearts failing them for fear. We get it. Please listen to me. I really, really understand. It's really hard, isn't it? To make ends meet, to find the time. You know, the kids, you got to take them to band practice and soccer, and, you know, you run around, you're trying to do spirituality and trying to have dinner together, and you're pulled in a million. I totally get it. We went through all the seasons, you know. Now get on with your Christian life. God's called us to serve him. Job one, get her done. Don't mess this up. And I know it's hard. And here you are, and here I am for such a time as this. The last go-round, the run-up to the end times. What is that? We read in Timothy, the last days. It's going to be tough going. Yeah, brace up. Brace for impact. Perilous times, what does that mean to you? And here we are for such a time as this. So think it through. So he's my fellow soldier, he's a brother, he's a fellow worker, he's a fellow soldier, but he's your messenger, you know why you sent him, and he ministered to my wants, he took care of all the stuff I was going to need, but he longed after you all, and he was full of heaviness because, get this, that ye had heard that he had been sick. He knew that when you heard that he was sick, you were going to be worried, and he was worried about you being worried. What a guy, Epaphroditus. And I got to tell you something. So I was sick Wednesday. If you came to church, you'd know I wasn't here. And it was the last minute because I was thinking, because she's saying, oh, you better cancel. I'm thinking, nah, I'm fine because I'm an idiot. And I didn't want to put it on somebody, like I say, last minute. But I just woke up and I was like, I kind of feel a little off. And then as the day wore on, I kind of got a fever and I kind of got achy. And as like early afternoon, I was thinking, yeah, you better call it off, you know, put on Facebook and stuff and let people know. And I was sick. And it was this 24-hour thing. I don't know. Every great once in a while, that happens to me. I don't know. Anything more than that. But, of course, if you were taking care of my needs, like my wife was, you'd think I was on death's door because I told you, when I get like this, I am such a drama queen. You have no idea. I'm this close to dying. And I got to tell you, any breath could have been my last. I was worried about me a lot more than I was worried about you. I look at this guy and I'm thinking like, I want to be that, but I'm not that. I want to be like really concerned about you even when I'm sick. And I spent the whole day in prayer mostly, but it was like for my deliverance that I get better. And by the way, I did. It was so weird. It was like one and done. I get these things, these 24-hour not quite things. And when like I woke up, like I was only like a little off, and I figured like she was like, yeah, we better cancel tonight and stuff. And I thought like, no, I'm fine. Spring a leak there. I'm fine. What do you cancel? First thing, you always worry too much. And then as I went on the day, I was very, oh yeah, she's right. She's dead. And again, like, but I didn't, I prayed and I prayed like that I get better mostly over and over and over again. But I prayed about you guys a little bit, but I wasn't overly concerned that, oh, this one's going to be right so concerned about me. I'm so concerned that they're concerned about me. I'm sorry. I mean, if that breaks your heart and you think, oh, you ain't much of a pastor, then, well, okay, you got me, but I'm just, again, I'd just rather be honest with you. Epaphroditus is the kind of guy, so others-oriented. Oh, no, they didn't find out I was sick. Oh, no, they're going to be so stressed. And now he's all nerved up that they're stressed, and he's concerned about that more than, you know, he's taken this letter back to the Philippians. Maybe he's the one who's read it. Maybe he hasn't read it yet. Maybe he's reading it for the first time together with them. I don't know. And maybe he doesn't want to read this part because it makes him look too, like, heroic. But he was, and he is. And he's an example for us. And the reason we're reading about Epaphroditus here is because Paul's telling us, hey, you know, I want you to work out your salvation now. Get on with it. Do it. Let's have it. You know, let me give you an example. I get this friend, Epaphroditus. You know him. You're the one. You sent him to me with the money. Well, I'm sending him back to you with the letter. Let me tell you about Epaphroditus. And he's given us an example in Timothy and Epaphroditus, what it looks like to work out our salvation with fear and trembling. And I think it's a beautiful place. Because, you know, you read through this sometimes. You read and you're thinking, like, okay, you know, where I got a salvation without murmuring, yeah, disputing, blameless, harmless, yeah, holding forth the word of life, yeah, I can see that. No, well, Timothy, why are you talking about Timothy? Epaphroditus, who? Why are we looking at him? It all flows. It's all, I want you to do salvation. I want you to get on with your Christian life. And then the why follows, the how follows, and examples follow. This is brilliant. This man's thinking is so far above the average. He's incredible. Yeah, he longed after you all. He was full of heaviness because you heard that he had been sick. Indeed, he was sick, nigh unto death. Oh, he almost died. He got so sick. But God had mercy on him, and not on him also, but on me also, lest I should have sorrow upon sorrow. I got a question. You ready for my question? Paul, you're the Apostle Paul. You know, sweatbands are going from you to the, you know, people in Ephesus, and they're getting healed and everything else. Why didn't you just heal them? And by the way, Trophimus have I left at Miletus sick. Why? Apostle Paul, you know, Eutychus falling out of the second story, deader than a doornail, takes him up, his life is still in him, heals him, brings him back from the dead. He's not even dead yet. It would be easier, wouldn't it, to heal him? There's no evidence that this was divine, miraculous healing. He's praying to God. He's saying, Lord, oh, please don't let this die. Please, please, please. He's such a good guy. I love him so much. And I don't want to try to explain to the Philippians what happened. And he's praying like you would pray, like I would pray. Does God heal him? Yeah. Is it miraculous? Just run its course? I got to tell you something. This came up in a television show that we were watching. They kind of, you know, the guy was all faithy and all, and flaky, and he wasn't a good guy either. I always see how they, TV, you know, when it's talking about faith, they, and I don't mind that they, you know, bring up, like, what is the role of faith in a person's life? That's legitimate, that's fine. But the guy's never, the man of faith, the person of faith, they're never the hero. I mean, you know, why? Well, we live in a dark world, right? I mean, that shouldn't surprise us. But he was all, yeah, believe, trust, pray. Believe in the miraculous. God can do the miraculous. And through it all, Jesus says, you know, those who are sick need a physician. And then we read last Wednesday night, the last one I was here, Asa, remember he had bad feet, his walk was messed up, but he resorted to the physicians. He didn't even go to the Lord, and God calls him on it. I believe in medicine, not exclusively, I mean, sometimes doctors, sorry to say it, look like they're ruled by pharma. They're more interested in get the prescription pad out before you even walk in the door. Oh, I don't know what's ailing you, but we got a drug for that. If we don't have a drug, we'll cut it out. Those are our issues that you should maybe change your life. Forget about it. And through it all, God. I definitely prayed. And it was such a minor little thing. I can laugh at it now. It's such a minor little sickness. I mean, it really was. It was like I had a little bit of a fever and achy, and that was it. Sue's gets a fever of 103. She goes to work. Back in the day, before we knew that we shouldn't do that, she's tougher than boiled owl. Me, I get a fever of 99. I'm right on death's door. Oh, it's the end of life. Pray. You should. And it wasn't like I was going to die if I didn't pray. I don't know. I've been healed every time I've ever been sick. And my proof of that is here I am. I haven't gone yet. Do you need to see the doctor? Does he need to bring out some pharmaceuticals, or does he need to cut something? Yeah, that happens. That definitely happens. I'm not anti that. I never have been. Involve God. Give us a chance to pray for you. Is any sick? Call for the elders of the church. We'll come right to your house. Or if you're here, we'll pray for you right here. We'd love to do that. He was sick, but God had mercy on him, not only him, but on me also, lest I should have sorrow upon sorrow. I sent him, therefore, the more carefully, that when you see him again, you may rejoice, all right, because he's better, and that I may be less sorrowful. And I want you to do something else. Receive him, therefore, in the Lord with all gladness, and hold such in reputation. Hey, this guy's a rock star. This guy is solid. He was working himself right to almost an early grave. He wanted to make sure everything was done. Oh, he's a workaholic. We got to frown on this and shake our heads. And no. He's the real deal. He's the guy who showed up and did what needed to be done. And that, friends, that's what it looks like sometimes to work out your salvation. Because for the work of Christ, he was nigh unto death. Okay? It wasn't because he was out late smoking and carousing and having unsafe sex with a multiplicity of partners. No. He was involved in the Lord's work. He was doing what God required him to do. And it almost took him to the brink. And here he is. He's an awesome guy. And I want you to hold him in high regard. Hold such in reputation. It was because of the work of Christ he was nigh unto death. Not regarding his life. That's silly, right? Well, listen, for me to live is Christ and to die is gain. Seriously? I mean, seriously? I mean, do you really think so? Do you really, really, really think so? Epaphroditus did. Paul does. He didn't regard his own life, not to supply your lack of service toward me. So he was taking care of what business. He was doing the things that God had called him to do. Start with just, maybe your life will end there, you know, being poured out like a drink offering to God. I don't know. You're going to die sometime. Well, that'd be a good way to go, as far as I'm concerned. But start out just work out your own salvation. Hey, let's get it. Let's do this. Let's do this together. By the way, it's a team sport. Don't try to be the Lone Ranger in this, as we already said.